And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 873. We're here on a Monday afternoon, evening, if you're on the East Coast, to recap your week 21 fab, talk a little look-ahead schedules for some pitching over the next 3 weeks as we keep targeting that to help you with fab or start sit decisions, and much more throughout the show. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BreakingBend_T. Benton, how you doing, my friend?
Doing pretty well, Bubba. It's first, I can kind of relax today because I came back from vacation yesterday and had to do all my fab in a couple hours. That's not fun. I would not advise anyone to do that. But also, a little sad, Hot D is over now. It's not over for you yet, but watched the finale last night, and it was a good ending to the season, but got to wait 2 years now, unfortunately. So looking forward to talking with it with you once you're caught up.
That's on the agenda this evening, so I should have that done tonight, and then we can knock it out. Yesterday, Sunday, I decided to be a dad, and we went water park, and then it was grocery shopping in Costco, and by the time I got home, it was so late. I'm like, I need to, and I had to get other stuff done writing-wise. So, yes, tonight is House of the Dragons, for those that don't know what HOT is yet, but our HOT House of Dragons. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I did see, though, Knights of the Seven Kingdoms season 2 comes out next year in 2027, and then Dragons comes out 2028. So we got that going for us. And apparently there's a movie about Aegon's revenge or something coming
out. It's Conquest.
So, Conquest. There you go. See, I knew you would know all that, but I saw something about there, because there's many others that are just like you going, oh no, we got 2 more years. But I'm like, at least they're giving us something. It could be like some other shows that I really like where we're just stuck staring at the wall for a while. And I know I'm way behind on things. I get it. I have a list of shows I want to watch, but I just binge watched Landman like the last 2 weeks. And if anybody likes kind of those kind of weird, like, I'm not weird, but let's say like intense, grungy shows, I thought it was outstanding. So, like, really good stuff. Good acting. Really good cast.
Never heard of that one.
Especially season 2. It's on Paramount Plus. It's really, really good stuff. Billy Bob. Got Andrew Garcia in that one.
Oh, I remember seeing that.
Demi Moore's in that one. There's a lot of good stuff in there, but just thought I'd throw that out there. I know I'm behind. That was a popular one before, but I thoroughly enjoyed that. All right. You know what else I enjoyed? Fab this week, just because it was active, Ben. active, at least for this time of year. We kind of predicted this last week because what did we do? We looked at previous season numbers, Ben, and what have the numbers done all year? Followed track for the most part. So I'll let you have the floor using Ryan's Fab Tracker that you all can get at the Bubba and the Bloom Patreon for $7 a month, along with many other tools, articles, discords, and more. But Ben, why don't you update everybody on what we saw spending-wise, moves-wise from the past week?
Yeah, well, Bubba, you mentioned there that we've been pretty on point with last year's, and I would argue that this week is actually a little deviation from last year's, mainly in the main event, but we'll get to that in a minute. First up, like always, is the OC. So in week 21, I guess through 21 weeks, we have $204 on average per team left compared to $188 in 2025. So we're a little behind spend in the OC. This week, week 21 in the OC, there was $24 spent on average per team compared to $18 last year. So a little bit more aggressive in 2026. And then compared to last week, it was $21. So we upped the spending in the OCs from last week as well. Then turning over to the main event, we're sitting at an average balance per team of $143. That's actually ahead of last year's $147. So we've caught up, because last week we were lagging a little bit. And then in week 21 in the main event, $31 on average per team was spent compared to $19 last year. So that's the big deviation I was referring to a minute ago. And the $31 is also from $25 last week. So both contests up from last year and last week, but the main event decent chunk more. And there was a $32 last week in the main event. I wonder if that was the trade deadline, but I feel like the weeks usually align pretty well. So maybe it was just more people spending ahead of time, or someone was called up or someone returned, but definitely the deadline this week, or I guess in the deadline, it was the deadline. Yeah. The deadline this week really is what caused the jump in spending. And then going to the moves per league, in the OCs, we went up to 19 from 17 last week. So this is the third week in a row we've increased in ads per league. Almost back to 2 per team, but not quite there. I have a feeling that might drop down a little bit next week and throughout the rest of the season from the 19. But the main event, actually, we had a green color for the first time in a while. We had 33 moves per league, So over two per team. And that's up from 28 last week. Also a third week in a row, it's increased back from week 18, which I believe was the All-Star week. So 33 is the most since week 12. So the main event was extremely active. I was pretty active too when we get to our own ads, but I think these are probably like the final peaks, and then I'm sure they'll kind of putter out as we hit the last 6 weeks of Fab.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see in this chart that you mentioned. It makes a lot of sense to me. Like you're talking about how just rest of season, the main event's pretty much in line with last year right now, but the OC is almost $20 behind last season. It's been $20 behind for a couple weeks now. And it checks out for the leagues I'm in. Like, I'm not in the main events, but I'm in other 15s and still extremely active. Like, my AC, very active. I had, I think, two waterfalls in. I only got one pick, the other one. And I'm not, it was 10 plus people deep, all got taken. Like, it was very active week. So I can see where the main events stay extremely active. For my OCs, I either had like one or two moves, and there was, again, so many non-runner-up bids. We're talking, when we talk some of these big prospects that got called up, some laughable prices that went through in some of these leagues. So I think it's just going to continue on, and I'm going to keep banging the drum. It's a dead horse, but it just emphasizes why, especially in OCs, maybe in 15s, you can stay judicious a little more, but in OCs, spend freely, not frivolously, but freely early in the season, because you do not need much of anything the rest of the way. It's pretty locked and loaded there. All right, like last week, we'll just use the main event as the driving point of where we're going, but we will talk OCs and how the movement went in those leagues. It's just the main moves for now and for future, Fab relevancy makes sense talking main events. So there was a handful of prospects and a big pitcher coming off the IL. So we'll start at the top here. George Lombard Jr. of your New York Yankees, Ben. He got recalled this past week, played in five straight games before the weekend, hit a couple home runs, hitting with good average. Still no steals yet, but that's coming. He was picked up in 60 main events, high at 251, average of 66, 75th percentile of 85. Picked up in 225 OCs, so not every OC. That's another thing I noticed when I was looking at some of the acquisitions this week. A lot of these big names didn't even get picked up in OCs I was in, which is comical to me. Lombard averaged 57 in the OCs, high of 301, 75th percentile of 73. So a couple outliers, as you'd expect in some of these, Ben, where people woke up and said, oh, I have money in Fab, let's spend it. But George Lombard was the top targets this week. Not the highest average spending, but was in the OCs, but second in the main. What were your thoughts on George Lombard, who you've probably watched a little bit so far?
Yeah, having a vacation was a little tough to catch all the games, but I did definitely saw the highlights of his homers, and I'm going to try to refer to him as GLJ. I don't know, it's a nickname that we've come up with over here. So
GLJ.
It's a little easier to say, I think, than Lombard Jr. even.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. So great first week for GLJ, Lombard Jr. The two homers is awesome to see. 17 at-bats. Only 5 Ks and 17 at-bats. He had 3 walks as well, so that's a pretty good ratio, 5 to 3. He's only 21, so this is a pretty big leap for him. If you go to a Savant, of course, he's not going to qualify for all the sliders, but his sprint speed is 96th percentile, so he's super fast. And you mentioned no steals yet, but I think over time he'll definitely run, because the Yankees are definitely – they definitely allow their fast guys like Jazz and Caballero to run. So I don't think they're going to prevent Lombard Jr. from doing so. It's kind of weird. His barrel rate is 16.7%, but it's an average exit velocity of 84.7 miles per hour. Complete opposite directions on his Savant page. So I think it's just a small sample thing. I'm pretty intrigued by that barrel rate. So the two homers could be legit. I think one was even oppo. So you can make all the jokes you want about being Yankee Stadium, but for a 21-year-old to be able to do that so early on, I think that's really impressive. And I just wasn't aggressive enough with Lombard Jr., GLJ. I thought I was a little aggressive in my one main where I really wanted him, but $60, I think, on average, and the 66 in the main was a little too much for me, and I was kind of close to that 25th percentile. So just odds are that I wasn't going to get him, and that's kind of how it went down for me, unfortunately. But I'm looking forward to seeing him. I hope they don't, they being the Yankees, don't do what they did with Volpe. If Lombard Jr. has to go down or something has to change, I hope they do that, because Volpe just got thrown to the wolves and he's a pile of skin and bones now. So it's been a promising start for Lombard Jr. And I think he definitely deserving of being the top ad. Some of the high ones are a little extreme. Just, it's also funny seeing that people had so much money left, but I think he was well deserving of being the top ad, and he was one of several shortstops, which we're going to talk about, which was kind of interesting.
PJ in the chat here said he dropped the hammer on Lombard and Zosi at 287 bid, and PJ's active. That's the crazy thing. It's like, I know we joke around about guys that throwing money out, like, oh, he woke up and found him. PJ's actually active. He's in this chat a lot, so I know he's paying attention to his fantasy teams. He had 287 left for Lombard, so that's like, I don't talk to many guys, and I know you probably don't either, that actually are in it every week that have that money left. So that's quite the, or PJ realized, hey, I only need like $20 the rest of the way, and here we go. So
yeah, too,
that could be an option as well. All right, the next most added player in the main event, Jackson Jobe, picked up in all 60 main events, average of 68. So his average was more than George Lombard, max of 163. In OCs, Jobe was added in 229 leagues, so the most added player in the OCs, average of 37, which was 20 below Lombard, max of 217 in the OCs. So Jobe, very popular pickup, returned, made a season debut from the IL against the Giants, 5 innings, 1 hit, no run, 1 walk, 4 Ks, looked very, very good against a very, very bad lineup. But I've heard a lot of mixed reviews, like really good stuff. Also, control could be an issue. What were your thoughts on Jackson Jobe? He was, to me, still the like elite option this week if he needed pitching. But there were a ton of streamable pitchers this week, so it made it tough to go break the bank on Jackson Jobe, at least for me.
Completely agree. He was my number one pitcher that I was looking to add, though, across all my teams. Didn't get him anywhere. Just kind of the same deal as Lombard Jr. I was like kind of low on money generally, speaking compared to a lot of these average bids. Like the $60 for the two of them would have put me down near the 30s at least at the most with my remaining fab team. So I couldn't really go that high. I mean, I could have, but I wasn't feeling that comfortable at this point yet with 6 weeks to go. So, and also with Jobe, he's coming back from Tommy John or the internal brace, whichever, probably the internal brace since he pitched last year. So he's back a little bit quicker. And then the other JJ we saw, Jared Jones, he's been restricted heavily by the Pirates. Granted, different organization, but similar type pitchers. They're both extremely young, coming back from serious arm injury. I think the Pirates have more incentive than the Tigers to release Jones. But so that tells me that maybe the Tigers are even more careful with Jobe than the Pirates have been with Jones. And sure, it's the first good start. You mentioned it was the Giants, an easier matchup right now. So if Jobe doesn't only allow 1 hit and his BABIP's a little more reasonable, what happens? Does he only go 3 2/3? Does he go 4 and he's done? So wins could be tough to come by. The Tigers are, I'm not sure they are on this.
I talked about them on Monday's leading off. 3.5 out of the Central, 1 out of the third wild card.
Okay, so they're competing. So they have incentive to have Jobe help them. So maybe he has they push him a little bit harder than I was speculating on, but it's just tough though with a young pitcher, and he's now they've lost Scooble. They probably want Jobe to be around for a long time. So definitely at the top of my list, but I wouldn't expect him to go more than 5 innings very often the last 6 weeks or 7 weeks of the season. So that's why I was a little hesitant to go too high on my bids for Jobe. But I mean, and also too, listening to Waxman's pod, and I think it was just Phil was pointing this out that he wasn't even that good last year, Jobe, before he got hurt. So it's not like he was dominating and then, because Jared Jones was much better when before he got hurt than Jobe was last year. So at least Jones had that. Jobe still got to figure it out, but this is a good step in the right direction. And I just don't know how helpful he'll be for fantasy the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be very interesting. I like the skills. The reason why people are also pretty excited, like, you know, you mentioned he wasn't that good last year. It's like just the pedigree and the hype behind Jobe. People have wanted him to be very good for a long time. Looking at your upcoming rest of season schedules when it comes to Jobe, he's about 37th, 38th overall schedule for right-handed pitching over the next 3 weeks. He gets not in this order, but he gets the White Sox, the Rays, and the Pirates. The White Sox and the Pirates are pretty favorable matchups, so we probably weren't going to get to him on the show, so wanted to bring him up using that tool. So 2 out of 3 matchups seem pretty solid if you're looking for that. But to your point, How many pitches does he throw? How many innings deep does he go? They need pitching. That's the scary part. Like when I was talking about him this morning on leading off, like their rotation, you got Framber and Melton as the 1-2 kind of. Like they need Jobe to get it together and be healthy for the postseason if they get there. So very interesting situation brewing in Detroit. Next most added player in the main events, Kalen Culpepper of the Minnesota Twins. Another Culpepper in Minnesota. Hopefully there's no boats involved this time around. Culpepper added in 59 main events. Too bad. Must have been Kirtland's one. Oh, wait. He dropped them. That's right. Average
he
of
never
42.
Got him.
Yep. Damn. Culpepper was average of $42, max of 129 in the main events. Added 177 OCs. You see what I'm saying? He's available in a lot of OCs still. At least too many OCs. $34 average, max of 270, 75th percentile of 42. Got a lot of Culpepper this week. I basically put the same price in for Culpepper and Lombard, and most people paid more for Lombard, obviously, as we discussed. So I got Culpepper where he was available, and I had the funds to do so. Hit a home run in his debut. He sat on Sunday. Now, that's the only thing I'm wondering is it a lefty-righty thing going on here? Because he started on Monday versus a lefty. Time will tell. If it is a platoon, there's probably a drop coming up here. But I think it's insane if they called him up to platoon him. But what's your thoughts on Culpepper?
I really hope they wouldn't do that, Bubba, to your point. And also to comparing him to Lombard Jr., I had GLJ definitely higher than Culpepper. That could be my personal bias, wink, wink, as a Yankee fan. But also, it seemed obvious that Lombard Jr. is going to play every day, as long as aside from rest days. And then we had that question about the righty where Culpepper sat on Sunday, but the person he sat for, so who played short, was Ryan Kreidler. I think he's a righty as well.
Yeah.
So he is, right?
Well, yeah, and I don't know if you noticed it in the chat today. It was in our Discord. I guess B. Welch or somebody said, apologies if I got the wrong person, but I guess like on Saturday he fouled a couple balls off his shin, so they just gave him the day off. And he's back in the lineup on Monday. So I'm hoping that's why he's out, not the platoon situation.
Well, also, it was weird. So you see this, the four at-bats on the seventh, and then there's only one at-bat and a walk on the eighth. And then I was looking at the box score. He wasn't removed. And I think someone said he got hit twice or something like that as well. So, like, actually hit by the pitch, I think. So it could be that. I don't know where he got hit. But, yeah, Culpepper, he was 20-25 last year, 113 games in a couple of levels. And this year at AAA, he has 14 homers, 17 steals, 271 average, 289 last year. So he has the fantasy tools that we love to see from a young player, and at least in the minors. And shortstop is it's funny. Middle infield, I think I was looking to upgrade in a couple spots. So definitely had Culpepper on my list. And I think for like if you added Culpepper, you have to play him this week. I have him in a DC, and I started him. Yeah. Yeah, you don't – I mean, it's like – I don't. Hopefully it's not a Esteri Ruiz situation, but I'm playing Culpepper in the one DC where I have him. So I think – I'm sure he'll start. It's just, it'd be weird for them to call him up and not play him every day. I just think that one day was fluky and could be wrong, but that's just how I feel right now.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring it up because I know other people are saying that like lowered their bids or that kept them kind of worried about even attempting to add Culpepper. And I'm like, if the Twins do that, just burn the whole system down. Like, what are you bringing this kid up for to let Ryan Kreidler play over him? Sorry to the parents listening to the show, but like Culpepper's, he's your top, one of your top prospects. You roll with that one and see how it goes. John Wilder in the chat real quick has a comment to make that Ben was top five in the main event when he wore the cutoff shirt on the pod. Hasn't worn it since. His slow slide continues. Coincidence? You be the judge. Uh-oh, we might see a gun show here pretty soon, I think, is what it
maybe
sounds like.
Maybe when I come back from vacation, I'll have to rip the sleeves off.
He's going to be all tanned from the beach. He's going to give you some leg photos in the Discord, and then he's going to bring in the gun show. Like, watch out. Watch your ass for tan. John.
I'd be lobster red if I try to do that.
Oh, you're one of them. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to another pitcher heavily added this week in the main events. Cody Bradford added in 57 main events, average of 15, max of 64. He was added in 79 OCs, average of 8, max of 43. I'll be honest, tough OC add for me this week. Main events, I get it because you can't wait around to see more. But Bradford came off the IL, faced the Giants in his return. It's the theme here. 4 1/3, no runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. I'll say I've always liked Cody Bradford a lot. I'm also terrified of the potential I guess you're talking about how they might hold Job back in Detroit. Like, what does Texas have to play for? That's my big thing. But I will also mention before I hand it off to you that one of the another reason, I say not the bigger reason, another reason people were quite interested in Bradford this week is he had a two-step going up at the Angels, which is oh so sweet. But the deterrent for me is at Sacramento on Sunday. Now, that could get pushed back to the following week and your loving life, but that's what attracted people also as the two-step. So where were you at on Cody Bradford this week?
To be honest, I did not put a bid in for him, and I was looking for pitching help. And it kind of comes down to, well, I know I always scrape the RotoWire probables when I'm going through my Fab ads, and I think I saw him there, but like he was kind of like a smoke and mirror pitcher last year, Bradford, and I just didn't want him like coming off of Tommy John. Same thing as, or I'm assuming it's Tommy John. It's one of the two.
Yeah.
Same thing, same deal as Job and like Jared Jones earlier before him, and just and even in the first start, he only went, what was it? He went fewer than five. He went 4 1/3, had a WHIP of 1.62, had 5 Ks, so that's good. Didn't allow a run, but he stranded 7 base runners. That's not going to happen every time for Cody Bradford. And yeah, I agree with you being a little scared of that at Athletics, but it is the Sunday start. There's a chance that Bradford would. Something could happen with the rotation, and then he gets bumped to next week, but then losing the appeal at the two-star week anyway. So the Angels is a nice start for Bradford. The A's, even though they're kind of banged up, it's still that ballpark, and he's not his top self right now. He could end up walking easily like 3 or 4 guys in that game and get babbled to death, and then it's a disaster. But so I definitely had spots where I could have used the volume that you could potentially get here, but I don't know if the wins will be there. You mentioned the Rangers aren't very good, so I think he's probably someone you look to add or draft next year, Bradford. I don't know. Yeah, I think he's added in all my leagues, all 4 of them. So I just wasn't that excited with Bradford.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's the tricky part. Let's go to another bat here, another prospect that got tons of love this week. And I've been doing my practice on this one, so I think I got it now after I butchered it last week with Martin on Bench with Bubba, and then Ryan on Bubba and the Bloom. It's Angel Henao. Henao is how it goes, somewhere along those lines. So that's what we're going with right now. But he was added in 55 main events, average of 23, max of 79, 119 OCs, average of 17, max of 58. Henao was hit safely in 3 of 5 games, 4 hits in his debut. What I loved about this is he plays third base when J-Ram had the day off, or he plays second base. Regardless, they're playing him every day. And if this continues, he's shortstop eligible in an NPC. He might gain a lot of eligibility before season comes to an end, and that might be really important in the last few weeks of the season, more than you think. So, yeah, I was very excited about him. I even mentioned it in the Discord on Sunday that everyone's going to talk Lombard and Culpepper for the hitters. Henao might be a little ignored in this, and added a lot of places, but a lot less money involved in this one. So any interest in Angel Henao this week?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was on my list behind the other shortstops. He was third behind them. Not by a lot of money, though. I was pretty low on Culpepper, like I said. Pretty low on Henao. I didn't get him anywhere. I think this because of winning other players or just not having enough money put on him. But looking at his minor league stats, a little bit more of a speedster, 70 minor league steals versus 35 home runs and 455 career games for Henao, including he was 13-11 this year, 96 games, 13 homers, 11 steals with a 300 average. So that's awesome to see. And yeah, the fact that he started playing right out of the gate every day, that's awesome to see. Granted, it's low, it's ninth, but from a fantasy waiver wire ad, it's fine as long as he's playing every day. It's not like you're drafting him and you're going to take the brunt of reduce playing time or reduce plate appearances from batting so low in the lineup. But for now, you take it, and especially with the speed and yeah, the impending third base eligibility is going to be very nice. He has, well, probably second. It seems like second might be there first. It'd be nicer if he got
agreed
third base first, but we can't, beggars can't be choosers. So I like it. I think he had a very good first week too. He was 7 for 19 with a homer, 368, only struck out twice. Walked once, so I think he could be good. He's pretty small. He's only 5'9", 150, so I don't know how the power is going to be. Like I said, he had some homers in the minors, but it seems like speed and average might be his calling card, which is definitely valuable still. So just don't expect too much power, I don't think, from him right now, but he's definitely a good add.
Yeah, the one home run already is pretty sweet. Obviously, you didn't get that if you added him this weekend, but the potential's there. But yeah, I'm looking batting average, I'm looking speed, I'm looking just get on base and score runs while also playing a ton. So that's I was pretty excited about that at the same point. And then this one, yes, Mark Jordan in the chat says, anyone else here, Hank from the Larry Sanders Show, and Hanau is pronounced Hey Now. Yes, I accidentally, every time I think about Hey Now, that's an older reference, Ben. You probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But, yes, it was a big one. It was Larry Sanders, and then Howard Stern used it for a long time when I used to listen to him, and then a lot of other people do. So, yes, Mark Jordan, fully know what you're talking about right there. All right, next most added player, another prospect, Hector Rodriguez of the Cincinnati Reds, picked up in 51 main events, average of 17. This one's interesting. Max of 103. 75th percentile was 18, so just above the average price. It was mainly low bidding is what I'll say there. He was added in 53 OCs, average of 16, 75th percentile of 23, max of 115. Hector Rodriguez was called up last week. It collected two hits over his five starts. So a slow go there, sits versus lefties, but the Reds have six righties this week in six games, including three over the weekend in Great American Small Park. So I can see why people were excited about him, but I can also see why he wasn't excited everywhere, if that makes sense. So what were your thoughts on Hector Rodriguez?
Well, Bubba, he'll be someone I'm talking about when we talk about our ads later on.
There we go.
You mentioned the good schedule this week. He's projected to start six times, Hector Rodriguez. And I also like using the Hector GIF to reply to Hector from Troy when Brad Pitt's yelling for him. I use that on Curlin's tweet, so hopefully that one will stick for a while, assuming he does well, that is. Maybe if he hits a home run, I'll use that from now on in the Discord. We'll go with that. So he gets the White Sox. Unfortunately, it's in Chicago, but it's Sean Burke, Castillo, Cannon. No one there scares me. I know Burke's having a good year, but it's still Sean Burke. And then he's home versus the Marlins for six. He gets Sandy and Yuri, but they haven't been as crisp as they could be, so I like it. And I'm trying to pull up his minor leagues. I know he had tons of power. It's in my recently search, so that's going to help me a lot. He had 27 homers this year, 104 games. And I'll give it away now. The hybrid main where I added him, I overspent a little bit, but I really wanted the power because my team, the hitting hasn't been as good as it has been. But and also on top of that, he had four consecutive seasons, Hector Rodriguez, of double-digit steals in the minors. So he has power and speed in his profile, and his average was never below 274 in any season. So power, speed, and decent average, good home ballpark. He's played consistently, even though it's not full-time. You can deal with the platooning. If you have multiple guys, you can plug in at the outfield position, which is the most common position for a platoon anyway. So I was excited to add him. I was hoping that I probably could have spent less because of the subpar first week where he's only 2-for-13. But Hector Rodriguez, I think it's a good chance to buy low on Rodriguez, and hopefully he'll hit a homer or two this week and in the coming weeks.
Yeah, if the schedule stays the same next week, they have eight games next week, four righties in those eight games, but three of those four righties is in Great American, so you have something else to look forward there potentially. And then the following week is set up to be another four righty week, and then potentially five righties. So yeah, a lot of righties on tap, plus the ballpark is not the worst situation to have. Next most added player, the main events, Dylan Smith of the San Francisco Giants, picked up in 51 main events, average of 13, 75th percentile, 17, max of 39. Smith picked up in 61 OCs, average of 9, max of 38. Some are saying Dylan Smith might be the new closer for the Giants. Yeah, he picked up a save over the weekend, got the leverage roll on Sunday, so he's got that going for him. He's got the only save since the trade deadline, so he seems to be in that role. He was kind of the eighth inning guy beforehand. I will reiterate what I have said many, many times. I don't trust the Giants bullpen, not to mention that Lovello flat out said, I don't have a sure thing. We just kind of play it as it goes. Smith might get the majority. That's good. But also, buyer beware. So what are your thoughts on Dylan Smith?
Well, as I told you earlier, Bubba, I got him in at least one league, and I'm starting him in that main event today. I didn't spend that much on him. Just looking to add an RP3, and that's what he is for that team. Dylan Smith is the he's the preferred save or preferred shareholder of the Giants closer position or closer monkey. I probably butchered how Jewett would say that. But on roster resource, he is the sole closer as well. So it seems like he's the guy. Only got the one save, but that's enough for you to make a move to try to add a closer, potential closer. He's only 26. Now he's a journeyman by any means. On the year, has really good pretty good numbers. 2.82 ERA, 1.25 whips a little high. He's kind of driven by the 11 walks in 22 innings. His estimators are mid to high threes. His xFIP's low fours. His Sierra is 3.68. So that's pretty good for Dylan Smith. And decent K minus walk, 16.3, a little low for a reliever, but the 27 K percentage is pretty nice. It's just the walks are the issue. But as a reliever, you can kind of live with a walk rate that's slightly above 10%. So I think Smith could be pretty valuable. I actually played him over Kenley in the one league. I didn't want to roll all three closers this week, and I just don't trust Kenley and the Tigers lately. So Smith was, I don't think he would have been the top player I was looking to add. It was more so I think I preferred Yennier Cano, but I'm not sure how he's not on here right now. So I may have just been lucky with having him available in a spot or two. But I could see why Smith is the most widely added closer this week. And I mean, who knows if it's going to last, but if he performs, I feel like the Giants might keep giving him the save opportunities.
Yeah, no, I think he will get most of them just because there's no one there anymore. They traded Killian, they traded Webb. Walker stinks. Like, you just, or not Webb, Miller, you just go down the list. It's a brutal situation in that for that team. I'm not going to say bullpen, that team. So, yeah, see what happens. Not to mention they don't get a lot of save chances to begin with. But if they do, he's the dude. So I'm not going to fault you there because it's coming from a Jordan Romano manager. Do what you got to do to get your saves. All right, next most added player in the main event, Moises Ballesteros. Moba is back in our life. Picked up in 47 main events, average of 18, max of 42. Picked up in 54 OCs, average of 8, max of 46. Dropped in one OC to make things even more entertaining. Picked up catcher eligibility on Sunday so you could put him into your lineups on Monday, but you had to roster three catchers to get there. That was a part of contention for many that didn't fully understand the rules. Ballesteros is playing every day for the Angels. I love it. Absolutely loved it. Talked about it. Like, kind of speculated on this in one of my articles at HQ and in the trade deadline show with Ryan last Monday. He's DHing twice and catching once. It seems like he plays every game versus righties or lefties. It's four singles. He's got four hits in his first six games, so it's nothing crazy, but we know the skills he can bring, and playing every day at catcher is pretty, pretty nice. So what were your thoughts on Moba coming in this week?
I was not looking to add a catcher anywhere, so I did not add Ballesteros at all, but it makes sense that he is now, I guess, after Sunday has passed, the top added catcher for the week in the main event. Yeah, looking at this previous weeks, also the playing time is inconsistent. This is his first time playing since week 13, but hadn't hit a homer since week 6, so looking at end of April, early May for Ballesteros, and the average on the year isn't pretty poor, but he's only 22, and just didn't get full run with the Cubs. So I think it's a good opportunity for him now. He's played even versus lefties, which I don't think was the case when he was in the Cubs. I think he was more of a platoon bat when he was DHing. So this is good to see. Hopefully he's not an average drain versus those lefties. I'd have to look at his splits, but it's a small sample where you can't really tell much yet. So I like it. And yeah, and I could easily see someone going to add him as a catcher and only dropping a catcher without having a second one on your roster. And that's kind of annoying, but it's just the way the rules work. And I'm sure that people could afford to find someone they could drop at this point to fit three for a week. So if he does poorly, maybe he dropped Ballesteros anyway and you keep what he had this past week. There's no guarantee he's going to play well. So just keep your options open now, I guess. And maybe the NFBC has done you a service. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's only going to be frustrating to those people that were trying to drop a catcher and have him be their second and it wouldn't go through. That's the people that didn't know the rule. That's when they'll get frustrated, like, what the heck? And the rest, So, yeah, but that's how it is, folks. Just like players that debut on Sundays, you can't add them until the next week. It's a system. It's just the way it is. You learn to play by the rules. All right, next most added player in the main events, Drew Anderson of the Detroit Tigers. Picked up in 46 mains, average of 10, max of 26. Picked up in just 35 OCs. So we're starting to get into the world where heavy main event, low OCs, maybe someone to keep an eye on, $7 average in the OCs, max of 14. Drew Anderson jumped back into the Tigers rotation this past week in Seattle, 3 2/3, no runs, no Ks, but has been really good out of the bullpen for the Tigers. And coming up, Drew Anderson is scheduled to, he had a two-step this week, Cleveland and the White Sox, not bad, but I was just kind of like, I don't know how stretched out he's going to be. Flaherty might be back soon, even though there has not been a whole lot on it. Where are we at on Drew Anderson, Ben? Because I know a lot of people that I listen to and talk to, there was a lot of really excited people about him, and I couldn't get that excited.
He was like a dollar or two on my pitching list. Looking on it now, I probably should have had Cody Bradford ahead of Anderson, because I always thought he was a younger player, but he's 32 already, and he never really started until this year. He had two career starts for this year, so... And you mentioned the 3 1/3 or 3 2/3 in his start, his last start when he did start. And yeah, it's just not going to cut it really if you're only going that deep into games. And he's definitely on here, Anderson, because of the two start week. He's pitching tomorrow versus the Guardians, Sunday versus the White Sox. But just the arm, hopefully, where you can get maybe six innings. And well, at this point, you kind of like a couple of win chances. I don't know if that's going to happen though. But, on the season, he's been okay. 4.1 ERA, 1.29 WHIP for Drew Anderson, and good Ks to innings ratios. But just seeing the recent workload, I wouldn't be too enthusiastic about getting a win potentially in this two-step week. If you need the hopefully good ratios, helped by a little bit of volume, that could be something. Maybe some Ks, but like you said, zero Ks and 3 2/3 in his last outing was not good. So. Let's hope that he picks things up for those who added him, but I don't know who else could. Is there someone on the way you think that could replace him for the Tigers?
Jack Flaherty.
Yeah, Flaherty, who I actually added. So we'll get to that. So, yeah, hopefully Flaherty's back soon for my sake. And then it seems like Anderson will be a short-term stream potentially, but I don't know. It's tough to say how he'll do. I would just keep the hopes down.
Yep, that's pretty much where I am on that one. A couple more here. There's actually a busy week. That's why I kind of want to mention a few of these. Abimelech Ortiz picked up another one, kind of prospect, picked up in 41 main events, average of 8, max of 39. Picked up in 15 OCs, average of 8, max of 34. Dropped in a main event to top things up. He was called up on the August 3rd to replace the traded Luis Garcia Jr. He's picked up 3 hits along the way, 2 home runs. Sits first lefties, but the power is darn legit. Couple concerns I had, though. 3 lefties, 3 righties this week, so that was kind of a rough go. Plus, I don't need first baseman right now. I'm clogged to the gills with first base and corner infielder. But, you know, our buddy, the king, Kurland, he loves himself some Abimelech Ortiz. What were your thoughts on Mr. Ortiz?
If we had him on bid list, yeah, to your point, didn't always need a first baseman, but if I needed, like, a utility bat, he was in there. Yeah, and you mentioned the platooning, you can't really start him for the first half of the week. And then even the weekend, you have 2 out of 3 righties potentially. So tough start for the week on Ortiz, but he has a huge power, had 33 homers in 2023 in a couple levels, A and high A, but still it's good power for someone that young. He's only 24. And I think he's going to play most of the time from here on out. So righties, of course, or as long as they're on the menu. So I like it. Hopefully, Kurland actually got him this time. I know he had him ahead of the week because he speculated on him being available pre-deadline. So good on Mike for doing that. But he's hitting second though in the games when he is playing Ortiz. So that's awesome to see, and that could help make up for the platooning. So I like it as an ad. I missed out on, like I said, but I would have definitely. The power potential is definitely nice at this point in the year.
Yep, I agree. It was a nice power bat. Kim, Hector Rodriguez, there are definitely a few of them this week. Blade Tidwell picked up in 38 main events, average of 9, max of 30. Picked up in 45 OCs, max of 15, average of 4. Surprised he wasn't picked up in more places, to be totally honest. Jumped into the Giants rotation. They said they're going to give him plenty of runway to see what he can do. 5 innings, 2 runs, 1 walk, 3 Ks. You like more strikeouts, but the 2 runs were early, and then he settled down, looked really good in Texas in his debut. And more importantly, like this could just be a one-week thing for all I care, but he's got a two-step versus Houston and versus the Road Rockies this week. I'm cool with that. Like I know it's at Boston next week, Arizona. Those are both like coin tosses. At Pittsburgh, they have slowed down a ton. So, like, he could be a bench streamer, but this two-step this week was really tough to just pass up.
Yeah, you love the Road Rockies for that two-step for Tidwell. Yeah, you mentioned the low Ks, only 6.88 K per nine on the year over 17 innings, but that's a couple of relief outings as well. Actually, he has 8 relief outings this year. That amounts to an 18.8% K rate, 13% K minus walk. So you kind of want to see those skills increase if Tidwell's going to keep pitching well, because his ERA and WHIP are good for now, but that could easily change if the Ks stay down. The swing strike rate is 11.3. So as a starter, you could deal with that. And that also tells me that the Ks should probably be a little bit higher than they are. Not a whole lot higher, but hopefully some positive regression will be there for Tidwell. And if he stays up, he could end up being someone you kind of use a bench streamer. So did you mention who he has next week? I have it pulled up.
Boston. It's Boston next week. Then it's Arizona. Then the Pirates, I believe, is what I think I saw.
Yeah, not the worst schedule. I know the Red Sox have been doing well, but I was looking at their lineup today, and there's not a lot of big names in there right now. So I think they could easily cool off. But they are playing at a historic level right now, the Red Sox, so I could be completely off. But but when you're playing that well, you're going to cool down eventually. So, yeah, if Tidwell does well this week and survives, I think he should. Hopefully the Ks are more than 6 between the two starts. You like to hope so. I think you kind of hold on to him, especially in 15s and to stream them as you need them.
Yep, I'm with you there. All right, let's get to one that we have a listener question for, which we could intertwine here in a minute. But the next most added player in the NFBC main events, Agustin the Goose Ramirez, picked up in 36 main events, average of 15, max of 51, picked up in 75 OCs, average of 10, max of 41. So he was second to Mobala to get picked up this past week, but everyone asked why I'm sour on him. Let's just get to the listener question here, and I can coordinate this with the question here. Where was it? Alex in the Discord says, why the change of heart with Goose? Bubba, you advise the Discord to add Mac over Goose. With the Stowers injury, he has runway and then just needs to hit, right? Fair. With Stowers' injury, has not been on the IL yet, but if he misses time, Goose could play first. They said he was going to play first and catch when he got called up. Since he's been called up, Ben, this is part of my philosophy, he has only started twice. He's pinch hit and got some extra run in 3 games. So he has 3 hits since his recall. 2 were in a pinch hit, come in DH game. He's caught, started one, catching once, came in off the bench, caught twice, hasn't played first base yet. Still striking out over 36% of the time. And trust me, this is one of the biggest Goose people in the world over here talking to you right now. The other concern I have, he went to AAA. He hit 254 with 7 home runs and 17 steals. The steals, awesome. The rest of it, you'd like to see a lot more, Ben, because that average and power, 22% K rate. It was better, but it was still like, what are we doing here? So that's why I said Max playing every day. Max actually been quite serviceable as a catcher too out there. You kind of know what you're getting with Joe Mack. Where Goose, sure, there's a ceiling. I don't know if we're going to see it because, A, I don't know if the playing time's there, and, B, it hasn't been at the big league level yet this year. So I had to get that out because I got to back up what I said. But what were your thoughts on the Goose this week? Because I listened to some shows today, and there were some people very excited about adding the Goose, and I hope they're right because, I loved him. But I'm also trying to be realistic on the situation.
Would you say his goose is cooked right now?
The goose is cooked, and it may not be worth the gander, as they say. Goose may not be worth the gander. So, yes.
Yeah, so I did look at Waxman's Fab Report earlier tonight, and I was shocked at how many teams or how many ads there were for Goose.
You and me both.
And if someone listening is in the Discord, you know how I held him forever. I was so mad when they sent him down back in May. I think it was May 4th. Of course, it's Star Wars Day. I remember that. But I mean, it was like ingrained in my head looking at his player page and seeing no updates for weeks. And, you mentioned the two starts. I don't have much to add. And if he's not going to play, I don't get why you're adding him. I wish they would play him. But yep, I guess with the Star Wars injury, it could end up being like a spec. I hope, though, whoever added Ramirez didn't start him right away. I think he's kind of like a wait and see because of the upside, but he was pretty bad when he was playing earlier in the year and only had 2 homers and 3 steals before he got sent down. And the average wasn't there. And it's, Yeah, it's been a tough sophomore year for the Goose, which is annoying because I had him on what is now my most important team and a couple of other DCs. So I was all in on him, but just hasn't played out this year. He could be a good buy next year if the playing time is there, but until we see some more consecutive starts, whether it's catcher, DH, or first, I just don't think he's worth rostering.
Agreed. Glad we're on the same page on that one. All right, I'm going to jump around a little bit so we can get to the look-ahead schedules. Like Slivis Basabe was picked up in 36 mains, playing every day between second base and third base with the Giants. He's hot for now. Ride it while you can. Andrew Alvarez actually got to go into the seventh inning. His last start looked good. I guess I'll give you the floor real quick if you want to give a quick thought on that. Andrew Alvarez was added in 33 main events, average of 5, max of 25, 7 OCs, average of 4, max of 13, dropped in an OC as well. And to give more context here, Andrew Alvarez is scheduled to face the Mets this week and then the Marlins next week and then the road Rockies after that. So a nice schedule coming up for Andrew Alvarez, who we may be able to highlight at some point as well. But what were your thoughts there? Because to me, it's always, will they continue to let him go that far?
I think as long as he's in the majors, you kind of want to add Alvarez in a 15-teamer. He made some pretty good gains around the year because when I was pretty excited to roster Alvarez or to potentially add him. I do have him in a DC. I don't know if I have him in a fab league now. I did in a couple spots. I had a drop when he got sent down. And yeah, he had a good return last week. He had, well, at least returned to the rotation. I think he had sent down. He got called back up for 2 starts, which is kind of wild. 7 Ks, 4 walks, like a little wider ratio between the two, a little more separation between the two of those stats. But he's still relatively young, 27, Alvarez. So I think he made some pitch arsenal changes back when we were looking at him early in the season. Don't know how those have maintained, but he had a bunch of starts before he got sent down briefly where he was walking either more or as many as he was striking out. So he's got to kind of get those Ks back for me to be interested in him, really. And the Mets are a good first, or well, at least a good start this week. And I don't think he was available in all my leagues, Alvarez, but I was looking to add him if he was available. So, which is annoying, but who knows? The key, he was interesting coming out off of last year, Alvarez, and then especially in Fab Leagues when we saw the changes that he made, it made it a little more appealing to add him. But he had his warts last year too, so if he's kind of regressed back to that, then he may be a drop eventually. But it's considering where we are in the season, I think it's worth taking a gamble on Andrew Alvarez.
Yep, he was in my waterfalls, didn't get him, but very much interested in seeing where he was for the gamble you mentioned. Okay, I might kind of tag team one here. You kind of mentioned Yainer Cano earlier, so I'm going to tag team the Baltimore situation. With Tyler Wells getting traded, Yainer Cano is picked up in 32 main events, average of 10, max of 64, 25 OCs, average of 11, max of 39. Andrew Kittredge was picked up in 21 main events, average of 17, 75th percentile, 23. Jenny Butler at 88. I only say that because she told us to mention it. She had a snafu with her iPad. We all have accidents. That's what that one was. Kittredge picked up in 24 OCs, average of 7, max of 35. So basically, we're still looking at the two. Like Cano seems like he slid into the Wells leverage role bin, where he'll get some saves. He's also going to pitch 7th and 8th innings, where Kittredge will pick up the mess then. You mentioned Cano earlier. You had him over, I believe it was Dylan Smith you were talking about. So how did you kind of look at this Baltimore situation? I know you mentioned Cano above Smith, which means he's above Kittredge, but did you still have interest in Kittredge, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he was down there for like a dollar, Kittredge, if I just wanted to like extend my fab list, my bid list that is. But so you look at Closer Monkey or Reliever Recon, they have Kittredge at the head of the committee. And I believe, let's look at Roster Resource. The Roster Resource has it as Cano ahead of Kittredge. And I went with Kittredge behind Cano because Kittredge pitched the 7th, I think, in his last appearance. So right there, that's telling me that either he's leverage or he's just not the full, they don't want him as the primary guy. Granted, Kittredge had the most recent save, but Cano had one the day before on that Tuesday. So I think I'm trying to compare this to another situation we had earlier. I mean, there's been plenty of these situations this year, but I have the lean towards Cano. They also gave him the contract right before the deadline or right around the deadline, the 2-year extension. I don't know what Kittredge's contract situation is, but I feel like he might be a free agent since they went out and got him, or like the Cubs traded him away. So Cano's going to be there for at least two more years, it sounds like. And they gave him that one save, and then Kittredge pitched the seventh. So I just think I was leaning Cano. I wasn't being too aggressive with him. I think I was like around $16 at the most for Cano. I didn't get him anywhere. And then like much as at the highest point where I really wanted to add a closer, and Kittredge was well below that. So I could be wrong. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time I was wrong on a closer situation, but that's just kind of how I saw it.
For sure. The last one I think I'm going to ask about tonight, Sammy Nateri Jr. picked up in 30 main events, average of 6, max of 16, 17 OCs, average of 9, max of 40. For those who are going, who? He's one of the leverage arms in LA now with Bachman done for the year, Zephyrgin traded. Ben Joyce is back, though, but I will say Zephyrgin got the save, the most recent save, the only one since the deadline. He got it on August 6th, and it's the first he's had since June 28th is what I would mention there. But I'll throw out into this mix, Ben Joyce picked up in 31 main events, average of 8, max of 24, 25 OCs, average of 8, max of 33. So, again, the Angels, I think, have had like 13 total saves this entire year. So I'm not even making that up. I'm pretty close, I think. Nateri versus Joyce, were you interested in either one of these options? Joyce is coming off the IL, but we don't know how they're going to utilize him just yet.
Well, I had Joyce on a bid list, kind of in the same range as Kittredge, because I Joyce has been kind of underwhelming, and he at least threw really hard, but then he was someone kind of like Dustin May early in his career where he was thinking strikeouts. So the whip would be kind of high, and so the last two saves were Nateri Jr., then Jose Fermin. Them and Joyce make up the committee on roster resource, and Closer Monkey, same thing. They have Joyce at the head of the committee, and then Terra second, and Fermin third. And Terra's actually available in a league where I could use a third closer. So I was looking at that today earlier, and not even upset I didn't get Joyce. And like you mentioned, how bad the Angels are. So it's kind of a last resort type move, I think. Nateri has good stats. He has 38 Ks and 10 walks in 25 innings. He has a 0.88 whip, 2.16 ERA. It was actually his second save of the year. The first one was a long time ago, June 28th. But that's probably the last time the Angels got a save opportunity. And then, so definitely way down on my list, both of them. But let's look at Joyce. He's probably, he's more rostered now. He's only available in my listener league, Joyce, and which isn't surprising. He's the big name. And then, Nateri's available in one more league than Joyce is for me. So it seems right the way they're rostered, but just could be a wasted roster spot.
Yep, it's a tough one, just being the Angels and all, but skills are good. Just not sure about how that role plays out. All right, Ben, you want to recap our ad drops for the week, and then we'll talk some rest of season schedule or the next 3 weeks for some pitching before we head out of here. A lot of names to talk about this week. Very, very active week, like Ben mentioned at the top, with all of the ad drops that took place, especially 33 on average in the main event leagues. So things will slow down, but we'll see. August 13th is the day where teams can pretty much bring up prospects without having to worry about, they can still be rookies next year. And I saw a couple of tweets with some really nice lists that are actually legit possibilities to get called up that would make these a little spicy for the upcoming FAB periods as well.
All right. So first up, as usual, is the listener league auction. I added the infamous, I'll say this again, Gabriel Hughes, dropping Aberribe 6-1. And he's in there for the two-star week on the road. A favorite target of mine, which I was surprised to discover once I was looking at things, is Masataka Yoshida. Added him, dropped Garrett Mitchell 4-1. I'll touch on Yoshida more when I go to my final ad of him. And then I added Christian Javier, dropped Freddy Peralta 3-0. Peralta should not be rostered anymore. So I wish I could drop him in my DCs if I could, because I liked Freddie as a SP2 earlier in the draft season, and he's just been a disaster. So he is not deserving of being rostered anymore, I don't think, even a 15-teamer.
Captain Cuts fully can gives in on that one. Loves it.
I might be your apprentice, the Padawan learner.
There we go, Padawan. Ryan's like, what?
he's like, what the hell does that mean? No idea. We'll tell you later, Ryan.
Yeah.
Now to the main events. New Jersey main was actually where my first Hector Rodriguez ad. I dropped Josh Young 18-5. A little aggressive there, but I like the skills, as I mentioned earlier. I also added Jack Flaherty here, dropped Carson Wisenhunt 6-0. I think Flaherty, it was projected to be in the rotation in a week, I think next week by RotoWire. So I'm looking forward for that ad. And I got Hunter Dobbin dropped Emmett Sheehan 4-4, the dreaded tie because I'm behind the other team. Moving to main event three, I added Jacob Young, dropped Josh Lowe 16-7. Young is going to be a beneficiary of the James Wood injury. So that's why I was aggressive there. Here's where I got Dylan Smith, dropped Eric Miller 6-5. It was actually one of the lowest Dylan Smith ads in the main event this week, so that was good. And then I added Jack Perkins, dropped David Peterson 4-0. Perkins, I think, is more – I was looking at next week when they're on the road for that ad. So he might have a two-step next week as well, I think. I'm not positive. But I think that's probably why I added him there. I'm looking for volume. And then lastly is the hybrid main event. Second time adding Hector Rodriguez, dropped Max Kepler, I think, again, 24-11. So a little bit more aggressive there. I really wanted him here. Got Javier again, dropped Tyler Wells 6-5. Then I got Jack Flaherty again, dropped Gage Jump, this time 6-0. I was looking at the upcoming schedule for the A's. They're at home this week, not playing Jump. I think next week he gets a start and then his two steps at home, so I'm not going to play him for that. With 6 weeks to go or 7 weeks to go, I'm like, I just don't want to have a half dead roster spot on my lineup. So I know you kind of caught your attention, Bubba. Want to say anything before I finish?
Yeah, I want to hear your reasoning behind it. Like, cause yeah, we've discussed off air many times, even on air probably. Yeah. Like road home starts not doing it. Like I know Texas is a struggle, but you know if he does it at home, kudos. Like next week at Kansas City, he's going to be pitching for me. That's happening. The two step at home is tough, Minnesota, Baltimore. But then the following week, we're talking at Seattle. Like these road starts coming up in a 15-team league, I am all aboard that train. So I get it. I wanted to hear your thoughts first, but also I know I'm very ruthless at times, but pitching's so goddamn difficult to find. And if I can see a Royals and a Mariners road start with a guy that can pump strikeouts, I'm going to roll the dice on that one.
And his numbers weren't that good though either. Like if I pull up in general, like underlying numbers, that is Jump. He has a 17% K rate, or that'd be really bad too. A 17% walk rate the last 3 weeks, with a 40% ball rate. So it's a little extreme, but he's walking so many batters. So it's not even a ballpark situation either. He's getting the Ks, but the walks are crippling him as well. So that's another reason.
The home road splits are insane though. Like they're. Yeah.
Oh no, I know. Jump off
the page. Oh, I know. I'm just saying, like, I agree. The walks have been a detriment to him. Even our buddy Jason Santo dropped him recently for the same reasons. Like you walk X amount of players and three starts, you're out. I can't remember the number, but like we're looking just home road in general. It's brutal. It's not a nice place to live at the moment. And I just want to check in now that you mentioned. I want to see now the home road. Yeah, home he has a 14% K to walk. On the road, 19%. It's almost a 12% walk rate at home compared to 9% on the road, which 9% still not good, but is an improvement. So, yeah, he needs the command to improve. I'm not going to ever deny that one with you. But, man, I'm seeing those Royals and Mariners starts, and I'm licking my chops on that one.
Yeah, I could always add them back next week. I'm not saying I can't. But
yes, and that's the beauty of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was that one. And then I also had, you'll like this one, Tim Tawa dropped Cooper Pratt 6-5. There it is. And then lastly, so this is, I made five moves this week. So I was scrambling.
Look at you. Saturday. Man, you should take off more often and just panic fab. You might.
No, I was, it was like an impending wave and not like a rowboat. So the last move, again, I alluded to it earlier, was Masataka Yoshida dropped Matt Chapman 4-2. Seven righties versus the Reds for the Red Sox this week. And Yoshida's been actually pretty good. And I need the average and just the solid plate appearances. I don't need all the power. He's had a couple of weeks of – actually has three homers over the last 5 weeks, Yoshida, so that's not terrible. Just like the matchups and the good playing time. And he's back in lineup today. He was sick the last couple of days, so I was happy to see Yoshida back in there today.
I love the Yoshida ad. Seven righties this week. I think I've written them up like the last 3 or 4 weeks in my fab column because they've always played like five or six righties. And dude's raking, to your point. And now you got the seven righties on tap. And you mentioned they're hot for now. It might cool off eventually. But if they're hot, he's been helping a ton with that. So, I love that ad. I think he gets overlooked a lot because, A, he just hasn't got the power we all thought he'd have. But it's the util only. And if you got other guys in the way, heck of an ad if you could pull that off. So I like that quite a bit. All right, my ad drops for the week. My Vegas 12-team listener league got Blade Tidwell, dropped Renell Blanco 9-5. Andrew Monasterio dropped Brian Rocchio 4-0. Continue to purge the Rocchio, who was so good for the start of the season. Got Hunter Dobbins dropped Shane McClanahan. Some people might frown at that. McClanahan's got the back injury. No update, which is not great for me. 2-0. Dobbins had a two-step this week. And then picked up Jeff McNeil, dropped Braden Montgomery 1-0. McNeil starting at first base versus righties. Got three righties to start the week in Sacramento. So play him to start the week, sit him in the week. But he's got first base, second base, outfield right about now, which is MICI outfield. Is a nice thing to have for that flexibility. Vegas AC. I told you I got one move this week because this league was stupid active. Way down the waterfall, I got Andrés Giménez, dropped Jake Cronenworth 3-0. The reason I went this route is I wanted middle infield support. Cronenworth has been my middle infielder due to injuries. Gelof's back, which helps, but I need speed. That's one of the few offensive categories where I can make a move in points. We've talked off air about that league quite a bit. So I was looking ahead, and over the last 2 weeks, Giménez, he's hitting like 280 or something. He's got four steals. Like, he gets on and runs, and that's what I want right now. I need someone that can go run because most of my guys have not at the moment. So we'll take our chance there, as I did not get the big dogs. But so many moves this week. And there's only, out of all them, there's so many moves, but there's only three $1 ads. Carlos Narvaez, Freddie Fermin, and Luis Torrens. Catchers. That's how crazy this is. Like, it's a really good league. I'm enjoying it and stressed out every single day. My OLAC picked up Angel Henao. I'm just going to start saying hey now. That's going to be the new thing. Dropped Renell Blanco 24-20. Picked up Blade Tidwell. Dropped Braxton Ashcraft 8-3. Mentioned that. See, I had Ashcraft in a waterfall in the AC bin like we talked about. That did not happen. So I made it also clear there's only three possible guys I would drop him for. So that was a part of it because you taught me that little trick. All right. Bubba and the Bloom listener auction. Picked up Kalen Culpepper. Dropped Garrett Mitchell, who's been ice cold 24-9. Added Tidwell, dropped Joe Ryan 11-7. Tidwell's got the glute injury and no updates on said injury. And then my beat Bubba OC added Kalen Culpepper. Here, this is where the OCs get fun, Ben. Dropped Brian Rocchio 6-0 for Kalen Culpepper. 6-0. Haynau was not added at all. Neither was Joe Lombard in that league. So, yeah, good stuff. Good stuff indeed.
I love OCs.
Yeah. All right, let's get to it. Let's talk about some of the best upcoming schedules for the week. Before we get started, Ben, give your little synopsis of what you and I will be chatting about.
All right, yeah. For those of you who have not been here the last couple of weeks, we are looking at a list of probable pitchers per RotoWire over the next 3 weeks and what their average – so the projected opponent's WRC plus has been over the last 30 days versus that handedness of each pitcher. So we have a list of lefties and then what all their projected opponents per RotoWire have done versus those lefties over the last 30 days. And then same thing for the list of righties. And then we kind of go from lowest WRC plus, average WRC plus that is, aka the best projected matchups to the worst. Well, we kind of just cut it off at the best. But yeah, so we're looking at the guys who have two. So it's only 3 weeks out. So if you have four games, then you probably have a two-step in there at some point. So that kind of helps identify some projected two-step pitchers.
Perfect. All right, let's just get to it. And you mentioned two steps. That's the first two we're going to have at the top here, but we won't go to the captain obviouses, but Patrick Sandoval isn't captain obvious, which is really great. He's made four starts since coming off the IL and pitched relatively well, getting deeper and deeper into games as he goes. Command is always a question mark with Sandoval, but overall pretty good. He's got four starts coming up over the next 3 weeks. The best opponent, WRC plus, 69.7. WRC plus over the next four starts for Patrick Sandoval. That involves a two-step this week at Toronto, at Pittsburgh, which has Toronto 53 WRC plus, Pittsburgh 88 WRC plus. Next week, Patrick Sandoval gets the Giants in Boston. Giants 55 WRC plus versus lefties. Good God. And then he gets at the Yankees, and the Yankees have an 82 WRC plus, and they've been striking out a ton as well. So really, really nice set of matches for Patrick Sandoval. He was higher up on my pitching list this week and still didn't get that many shares of him.
Could be for the better, though, Bubba. You look at his underlying numbers, and well, if you look at the year, he has a, I'll say, grotesque 1.60 whip in 24 grotesque innings since he's returned. Yeah, I had to pull out a big nasty word there to describe that. Yeah. Which is kind of like, I think when we first talked about Sandoval as an ad back for the main events a couple weeks back, that was one of the things I pointed out, was that his career whip is always generally 1.3 or higher. He had one sub 1.3 whip season, and that was 1.21 in 87 innings in 2021. And then you look at his underlying metrics the last 3 weeks, he's getting by with a 94.6% left on base rate, which is extremely lucky. It has a little bit of an unlucky BABIP of 341, but he's walking almost 12% of batters. That's leaving his K minus walk of being 10.4%. So I'm fine with Sandoval if you have a team, whether it's like a head to head league where you kind of just reset each week and you just want volume, that makes sense. Or if you have a roto team that has very good, namely whip. If you have a pretty good lead in whip and you need volume, Sandoval's your guy. But other than that, just be careful because he could detonate that whip on you and then you're crying or something. But it's for now, good matchups. Just it's a dangerous stream, but one I can see in the right scenarios.
Yep. And this time of the year, some guys are just looking to accumulate. And if you're going to accumulate, at least look at the good matchups before you just start really throwing those two steps that are already walking in trouble. At least this one on paper looks like you have a shot and you go that direction. One we kind of talked about last week, but he's still near the top here, and they're missing your system. It omitted the doubleheader. You mentioned it on the side, but Ryan Weathers technically has four games coming up, so he might jump the mix, but a really nice set of matches. He has two step this week. First, Seattle at Toronto. Seattle is a 110 WRC plus versus lefties, but honestly, they haven't been that good. I'm surprised it's that high. So I don't hey, you're a numbers guy. I'm not going to talk trash about him, but I'm just surprised from what the eye tells me. But Toronto, 53 WRC plus. Then the following week, Weathers gets Toronto again, which you love to see. And then gets Boston, who knows by then might be quite slow. So yeah, you got a nice little setup with Ryan Weathers coming up here, and who's also been very, very good the last three or so weeks.
Yes, he's been something. I think we talked about him last two shows, so this is three in a row. And the start we omitted, the Red Sox, they have a 98 WRC plus versus lefties last 30 days, so that's a fine matchup. We mentioned like Yoshida's got the heavy righty schedule. Willier doesn't platoon anymore, but I know they mix and match a lot, the Red Sox, so that could be part of it. Last time I looked at him, the skills were really good. Let me pull them back up for Weathers. I can't imagine they've really changed too much since we did this a week ago. Yes. Sierra XFIP are hovering around 3 the last 3 weeks. Swing strike rate is 12.8% last 3 weeks for Weathers. K minus walk, 16%. So that's average to above average. The XR ERA, I think that was a problem for him before, was the contact. It's down to 4.15 over the last 3 weeks for Weathers. So that's an improvement. And I think what I said last time was just kind of play him, because it's hard to pick out the good starts and the bad starts with Weathers. I was saying I think the pattern had been that it's either a sub 2 ERA in an outing or a 9 plus ERA in an outing. And I don't think you're going to do too well trying to figure out which is going to occur. You kind of have to go with the skills with him, I think. Let me see how he's done lately. Like I said, I was away for a couple of days or so. Yeah, last two, he's been scoreless the last two starts. Weathers, 6 shutout versus the Cardinals, 7 versus the White Sox. So I think like I said before, Sandoval in the right matchups, but I think he's kind of play Weathers right now and ride it out.
Yep, I like Weathers quite a bit coming up here, and I'll ride or die with that one. But now we're getting to a player that will be widely available in Fab Leagues, and that is Mitch Bratt of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, weirdly enough, when Fab took place Sunday night, there was questions, would he stick in the rotation with Michael Soroka coming back? As of now, it appears he is. Brad is set to pitch this week on Tuesday versus the Rockies. He, by the way, has like the fifth best upcoming matchup, 78 WRC plus over the next four games. But he hits the Rockies at home in Arizona, so the road Rockies, 89 WRC plus versus lefties. Next week, a potential two-step at Boston versus Cincinnati. Boston, 98, again, good. Cincinnati, 70 WRC+, plus, and it's at home in Arizona. And then the following week, he gets the Giants in San Francisco, who has that wonderful 55 WRC+. plus. So this is one of those, Ben, that, you know, the name Mitch Bratt doesn't just jump off the page to a lot of people, but his last start, 7 shutout innings, 1 hit, 3 walks, 9 Ks versus the San Diego Padres. This is a name that might need to be added into the mix, unless you're going to tell me his underlying stuff's probably not skin. But what are your thoughts on Mitch Bratt here in this upcoming schedule?
Yeah, it's actually been pretty bad lately, his underlying metrics. But The big thing, though, and I saw this as well, is that he had the 9-strikeout outing versus the Padres, and that, and then when you see Road Rockies next, and then he has a 2-start week next week, I believe is how it goes down. You love seeing that, and I have him in a spot already. He was definitely one of the higher up pitchers on my bid list this week for the stream this week, and then the 2 starts next week. I didn't get him where I was hoping to get Brat, but for now you roll with it. I'm more comp. Well, I don't know. I guess it's more of an unknown with Brat compared to someone like Sandoval. So I probably prefer Brat over Sandoval going over these next couple weeks. I mentioned the bad underlying numbers. I'll say his swing and strike rate's been 6% over the last 3 weeks for Brat. So that's all you kind of have to know. Even that 9% or that 9-strikeout game didn't do a lot to correct it. But he could have got lucky with CSW, stuff like that. But I think for now, at least these next 2 weeks, and Cincinnati is the not good, 3 weeks. It's at
Arizona too.
Yeah, it's the Boston, Cincinnati is part of the two-step. So that's good. And the Giants after that. So I think you kind of, in a 15-teamer, you're playing Brat the next 3 weeks, I think is what it comes down to. So I wish I had him in a couple more spots, but I do have him at one, so I'll take it.
Yeah, and I just want to mention that, because like Mitch Brat, he was added in 32 main events this past week, $7 average, max of 32. He was added in 20 OCs. So just keep that in mind. He's added in a chunk of leagues, but might still be sitting around out there for you. All right, we're going to skip a slug here because it's like Messick, Cameron, Ranger Suarez, Foster Griffin, Bradford. Just, we already talked about Bradford, Gore, Tolley, like a bunch of names that we know are good at pitching. But, and then like Daniel Lynch is here, but he's not fully stretched out. So I have questions, I'll be honest. So we'll kind of skip that until maybe we get more answers there. Framber Valdez has a good setup. I just want to hit on one name here because I want to get your thoughts on air. It. Justin Robleski.
Okay, you did. You kind of did.
of the Los Angeles Dodgers. His opponent's average coming up, this will be the last one because we're hitting the 90s, and those are the rules around here. 91.3 over his next 3 starts. Robleski, it's been rocky of late, but I'm only doing this because you can say things well enough for listeners to understand. His upcoming 3 matchups, he gets Milwaukee in LA this week, Pittsburgh in LA next week, and then he hits the road to face Detroit. It's 93 WRC plus for Milwaukee, 87 for Pittsburgh, 94 for Detroit. Ben, what are we doing with Justin Robleski as things have gotten really, really bad?
Well, I'll say I thought you were going to go with Nick Lodolo, who is probably
you just don't pitch Nick Lodolo.
I played him in a couple of DCs out of necessity, but they're lost. Yeah, Robleski was tough. I was asking, I was talking to you and Ryan about starting him this week, and the last start was so disappointing for him. I think it was versus the Diamondbacks, barely went, didn't even go 4 innings. And then it's been 3 bad starts in a row for Robleski. Granted, the Seattle start was kind of unlucky. He only allowed 7 base runners and 5 of them scored, but he had 7 Ks and no walks. So it's really been the last 2 starts versus the Cubs and the D-backs have been really bad for him, because he has a combined 7 Ks and 6 walks in those 7 2/3. So he's just been really, really bad last couple starts for whatever reason. And the underlying numbers over the last 3 weeks are okay. 15% K minus walk. The swing strike rate's only 8.4%. It had been climbing for a while, though, for Robleski. So that's why I was feeling more encouraged about playing him all the time. And one thing I did look at today, and I want to just call out for the listeners, is that I still have time to play him this week. I'm still a little unsure about that 7th roster spot or that 7th pitcher for that one league where I have Robleski. And his splits at home and on the road is something that I'm heavily considering. So that you mentioned the Brewers matchup this week is favorable based on the WRC plus versus lefties for them. And it's home. So at home, Robleski has a 2.91 ERA and a 0.8 whip. On the road, it's a 3.86 ERA and a 1.36 whip. So not horrible, but definitely much better at home. And his last 2 bad starts were on the road. So that's so when I do my little sit start thing, I look at a few different variables, and Robleski was the 2nd best to our savior, Walbert Urena, on my team in question. So I was looking, I'm like, do I really just play Robleski? But then he's been so bad last 2 starts, but then he has the splits. It's just so tough. And you mentioned too, there's only a single start because of the Dodgers 6 man, which is annoying too. There's no 2 steps for Robleski probably at all the rest of the season because of he has had one. So I don't know. I'm still up in the air about this week's start, but if he does well, I'm definitely going to play him versus the Pirates next week, which is also home. And then if he does well again that start, even though he's on the road versus the Tigers, they're not the strongest lineup. I'm sure they'll probably still be not the best versus lefties. It'll be in consideration, but I don't know. I have like an hour to decide on this Milwaukee start, and it's tricky for him because the skills were improving, but now they're kind of okay. And if you need the wins, it makes sense because the Dodgers, well, even though they've kind of been struggling lately, but they have the potential to go off. So it's tricky with Robleski. He's kind of like you like to think he's kind of a safe pitcher, but the last two starts showed that he's not. So I don't know. It's a debatable start this week. And then from there, it's just, I think kind of see how he does in his most recent start almost, which isn't really good analysis, but he's been an enigma all year really. And I thought he was a set and forget it after a while, but now it's not the case anymore, unfortunately.
So you're telling me he's kind of on a week-to-week contract. Prove-it deal. He's on a prove-it deal. It's like the WNBA.
Yeah, like an NBA 10-day contract or something like that.
You're thinking the same thing. Yep, he's on a prove-it deal right now. But that's where we are this time of year. Captain Cuts will let you know that for sure. right-handed side of the table here, Peter Lambert's got the best upcoming schedule in the next 3 weeks, according to WRC Plus of their opponents, 75.5 for Mr. Lambert. So I just want to throw that out there. You're pretty much starting him anyways. But let's just throw this on the table. The Phillies have great matchups. We talked Ranger Suarez, number 2, 3, and 7 in the right-hand department are all Phillies. Nola's 7th, Wheeler's 4th or 3rd, Andrew Painter's 4th, Ben. So I'm just going to loop all this together. Like Wheeler, you're going to start regardless, even though he has kind of struggled of late. But you got Painter gets at St. Louis, at Minnesota this week. Then he gets St. Louis next week. And then he gets the Angels, which we love. Nola gets Minnesota this week. Not bad. Miami next week. And then he gets Seattle the following. Okay, so this is why they're good matchups. St. Louis, 82 WRC+, Angels, 70, Minnesota, 78, St. Louis, 82 again. Yes, we're looking at matchup spin. But like I said, Wheeler, you're starting. Painter, Nola. The floor is yours, Ben.
I think I had to start Nola and a DC, unfortunately, but to your point, the matchup isn't that bad. So I should be worried still because it's Aaron Nola. But Painter was an ad, I think, in the mains last week, I want to say, or the week before. He's been pretty good since he's come back. He's a 13.8% swing strike rate, Painter, 15% K minus walk. The walk rate is 10%, so it's bringing it down actually. So the K rate's been 25% for him. Good estimators, except for the xERA is a little high for his ERA. And so I'm definitely leaning as a deep league stream for Painter over these next couple weeks. I would say so, especially this week. That's what he was appealing for this week. I think last week for me, I was looking ahead, a week ahead for two steps, and the St. Louis, Minnesota definitely stood out. Nola, a different story. He's been okay on and off lately. His swing strike rate in the last 3 weeks is 10.2%. CRX FIP are just above 4. K minus walks a little worse than Painter's at 14%. They're both kind of in the same category of just see how your options are, and either of them could end up being like your 7th best starter in a week, and then I think it's fine to take the gamble, but it's tough. You definitely play the Painter 2-step this week. Did you say Nola has a 2-step in there as well?
No, Nola just has 1 start a week for each of the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's tougher. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely in consideration. You can't really, as bad as Nola's been, you can't really write him off for the matchups, and he's pitching a little bit better than he has been before, but he's been the king of pitching better or pitching worse than his underlying numbers have been the entire season. So if you don't want to play Nola, I don't blame you, but I think Painter's worth a shot on more so than Nola over these next couple weeks.
Yeah, I was kind of interested in Painter this week. Again, lower on the totem pole, didn't get any shares, but I saw the appeal to what you were throwing out there. Astros also have a nice set of schedules coming up. Ronel Blanco, opponent, says 83 WRC plus over 4 starts. Javier, 83 over 3 starts. You got Hunter Brown and 87 over 4 starts. And even Wesneski's down here with a almost 90 over 4 starts. And I like Wesneski quite a bit, but I want to focus on Blanco real quick because he's kind of the guy like Javier people are interested in. You can hit on Javier if you want. Hunter Brown, you're starting. Wesneski people are pretty much really in love with. I know I am. But when you look at like Blanco coming up here, since he was recalled, it's been kind of rocky for him overall. He gets the Giants in San Francisco this week, which is great. Next week gets the Angels. Great. Following week, 2-step at the Yankees, at the Mets, which on paper is not bad. When you look at the Yankees, it's a 77 WRC plus. Mets is 93. Giants is 93. So the Giants actually have the toughest on paper matchup in this entire thing. But when you see this overall upcoming schedule, like maybe it's maybe it shows that he's a bench streamer. I don't know, but I want to at least highlight Blanco, who it feels like I said, people are on Javier, people are definitely on Brown, and people are on Wisniewski. Blanco's kind of the guy, the forgotten man in the group.
He is, and his underlying numbers haven't been that good last few weeks for Blanco. Kind of, so you mentioned Javier as well. He's one of the guys I'm debating starting over Wroblewski in that one team. And since he's come back, Javier has like a 6.4 Sierra. He's just been atrocious. Only 8% K rate, 6% K minus walk because of that. Very low K rate. Blanco's up. His is much better. It's 7.4% K minus walk over the last couple weeks. So last 3 weeks to be exact, which might only be 2 weeks for him. So they both been pretty bad skills wise, but the schedules give them, or they kind of prop them up into consideration because at least with Javier, he has the Mariners start this week and they've been very bad versus righties. So, and then you're shocked to see they were pretty good versus lefties. Maybe they're playing more righties, which isn't really a shock. So that's the deal there most likely. And then you have to wait 2 weeks for the Blanco two-step. Right, I guess it's 2 weeks, yeah, because it's the 23rd when he gets the Yankees and the Mets on the road for both of them. He's definitely like – Blanco's definitely a bench streamer, and you just kind of wait and see if the skills improve. Maybe definitely playing versus the Angels next week, who have the 70 WRC plus versus righties. But if he doesn't show improved strikeout rates and reduced walk rates, both of them, Javier and Blanco, it's going to be tough to start either one of them, even though they have good matchups, because if they're just that bad, even these underperforming offenses can still take advantage of these guys. So, and they're both coming off an injury as well. So it's not like they've been here all year and it's just a cold stretch. They're coming back from elbow surgery, I think both of them, and that's hard to come back from. So I would just be cautious. And despite like the good matchup with the Mariners, you guys were talking about, you would probably play Javier versus my options. He's been such a bad pitcher lately that I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, no, I fully get it. That's why it's that tough, you know, give and take in these matchups. Like you said, you have a, I don't know, we'll get you off the show here shortly.
I got time.
Final thought there. But yeah, it's just, I want to highlight some of these guys have good matchups, but it's not always a given, even when we see the good matchups. That's why I wanted to bring some of these names up, because like I skipped a bunch of lefties because you're pretty much starting like 95% of the ones we would have talked about without even thinking about it. Another righty I want to talk about, this is for you, Ryan Bloomfield. Regression hit on Sunday, not going to deny it, but Randy Dobnak's upcoming three starts has about an 87 opponent's WRC plus. Now it's all weighted thanks to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, who he faces this week, by the way, who have a 70 WRC plus. After that, it's Dobnak at home versus the A's and then Dobnak at Toronto. A's have a 93.5, Toronto 96. I'd be honest, the Angels start, okay, I could live with that. I wouldn't be doing the other two starts. I don't know about you.
Yeah, probably what I said about Javier and Blanco applies to Dobnak. Dobnak has similar crappy skills, which has always been Ryan's big thing the last couple of weeks when you guys have talked about Dobnak. So I don't blame him at all for saying he's not good, and Dobnak isn't good. He's just gotten really lucky with a high left on base these last 3 weeks, 81.5%. So he's gotten fortunate there. And the ERAS measured like slightly above 4 in that time. So it's not the worst, maybe because of his ground ball rates. Could be contributing to that, and that's helping with the keep the homers in check. But when you're only striking out 6% more batters than you're walking, like Dobnak has been, that's going to be trouble eventually. So I would just kind of, maybe you do play Dobnak because he's running hot and it's the worst matchup of the three is this week. The A's on the road is appealing next week, and that's if Dobnak survives the Angels this week. Okay, maybe you consider him next week for the athletic start. And the Blue Jays are just as bad as well. So, and that's evident by the numbers here. That's why we're talking about him. But skills-wise, he's as bad as Javier and Blanco have been. So it's same spiel, just proceed cautiously. And if you can afford a better skilled pitcher, maybe with a slightly worse matchup, I might lean that way.
And I want to mention that the Jays and the Orioles have some nice matchups coming up as well that kind of fall under the 90 WRC plus opponents. Anybody else you want to discuss, Ben, as we're starting to kind of – it's pretty much just a team-by-team thing as we head towards the 90 mark.
Yeah, one of the Jays is Taillon. I've heard him as a popular ad. I would never touch Taillon
Well,
anymore.
I'll stop you real quick. He just left his start with right forearm tightness, so you don't have to worry about that.
I did not know that. So,
No, it literally
all
just
right.
happened. I just noticed in the Discord when you're talking about Dobnak, it just happened.
Yeah. You know, and then this is pre Nathan Eovaldi injury, so he was a good matchup. So
Well,
whoever
hang
replaces
on.
him, yeah, Eovaldi was 91.8. So whoever replaces Eovaldi has a decent matchup. And then the other Cardinals are here, Leahy and Piante. They're slightly above 91. They're almost 92. So they're pretty appealing as well. So the Cardinals righties have it pretty good lately, or in the upcoming few weeks. So that's basically it, I guess.
Yep. So we'll keep this little train going to finish out the season. Hopefully, at least opens your eyes to some good matchups. Like, I didn't bring up JT again. He has a good three matchups coming up. Two of them are at home, but his road start very favorable at Kansas City. So JT again, another one of those kind of bench streamer options as you go along the way. Before we head out of here, Ben, got a couple of Discord questions for everybody here. They actually brought quite a few compared to the last few weeks, which is great to see, Ben. So let's just get to it. Alex, oh, okay. Alex was the goose question. We already got to that. Jenny Butler, this is what I want to let everybody know when I said it. She says, feel free to remind people that you can accidentally move guys up and down a bid list when you're on your phone or iPad. Yeah, she went to move a different player and accidentally moved actually Kittredge above Jackson Job. And that was what changed the $88. Adam W says, how long in remaining or how low in remaining fab are you comfortable playing with at this point in the season, Ben?
Well, I'm currently below where I feel comfortable, so I would say 80 to 100 probably.
80 to that. Wait, you don't want to be below 80 to 100 right now?
Yeah, but I am below 80 to 100.
So you want about 15 bucks a week, give or take, is what you're looking for. At least
Yeah, that
15
sounds
bucks a week.
right. Yeah, it's like what, six more fabs? So
Yeah.
yeah, let's say $80.
Okay. So that's why I was kind of. Yeah, I think you can get away with 10 right now, but comfortably 15 to 20 bucks a week still sounds pretty good just because it allows you to put in like, you know, a $12 bid instead of a $6 bid to get guys. That kind of thing where you can spend a little extra and go get guys you want. Go get your guys. That's why I like that right now. A lot of really good players say, screw it, I'm gonna go play one, two, $3 guys, and they do just fine. You just gotta make a longer waterfall in that sense. Like this week, I didn't have that many moves I had to make, so I had a long waterfall of a bunch of one, two, $3, and I only got one of my two or three potential moves in an AC. But that's just the world to live. I'm not even mad about it, but that's yeah. It kind of I think 15 to 20 bucks a week would be very comfortable right now. Not necessary, but very comfortable. Mailman Mike says, "Who are some of your worst sunken cost guys in Fab?" We will save that for the end of the season. I'll just throw that out there because that could be a long list, and we have to do a little research. But we will do some. Look back on the season stuff and fab goods and bads will take place in that show. Mailman Mike, so not ignoring you, but we got you on that one. Adam Brunch just wants to let us know that I finally dropped Freddie Peralta, Ian Happ, Lou Bob, Brian Rocchio, and Garrett Mitchell. I mentioned Rocchio and Mitchell in mine. No questions, just honoring Captain Cuts. My heart is melting. Thank you, Adam, on that one. Dr. Doom says, any worry that Miguel Vargas may be turning back into a pumpkin? So here we go. Finish it off with that one, Ben. Any thoughts on Vargas? Because he has, no one really talks about him these days because he has slowed down quite a bit. To be fair, the White Sox have slowed down quite a bit. They were the juggernaut at one time, one of the best offenses in baseball, and that has quickly deteriorated, Ben. But when you look at Miguel Vargas, you know, he's got a couple home runs, or two since January or July 31st, but it's, you know, five or six hits. It's been quiet, but what are your thoughts on Vargas?
So I do not have him on any teams this year, Miguel Vargas. I'm gonna go by his monthly splits. He has been, it looks like from his week by week, not that terrible. He had five homers in April, seven in May, six in June, four in July. The steals dried up. He had none in July after having two or four the first 3 months. He's been slumping it hard in August, 167 average versus 216 in July. But on the year, he had 200 in April, Vargas. And for his career, I think last year, well, actually, I have a page pulled up and then I'll go back to the other one. So I pulled up his rolling game averages, 30 game rolling game average on Fangraphs. The WOBA was definitely going down a little bit. The homer to fly ball was more like hovering closer to 20% at times, upper teens earlier in the year. Now it's down to more like 9, 10%, which is more in line, I think, with league average. I'm not sure what the league average homer to fly ball rate is, but I think he was just running hot early in the year, Vargas. And he's a very very flyable heavy profile. And on top of that, so his BABIP's going to be very low, which is what it has been the entire year and last year as well. But his hard hit has actually spiked in the last, 40 games or so for Vargas. So I think it's the profile isn't all that toast, if you want to put it bluntly. If I look at his BABIPs, last year it's 261, this year it's 241, which is very low. But like I said, his fly ball rate this year, 51.9%. Last year was 51.8%. His approach is going to lead to a low BABIP and a low average. So you kind of have to live with that. The steals have dried up. I wasn't that big on him going into the year, but he's definitely kind of broken out this year. I think, I don't know, if I look at his week to week, he had two homers 2 weeks ago. He had a steal last week, a homer the week before that. So week 18, he had a homer. Vargas' average has been bad, like I said, the last 6 weeks or so. So he's playing a lot. So if you're concerned about your average dropping, which I understand because I'm in that boat in a couple spots, maybe you do sit Vargas a little more than you would, especially in a shallower league. But I think it's just who he is. He's flyball heavy, and if they're not leaving the park, the flyball's at an elevated rate like they were earlier in the year, then you're going to have like a more mediocre player. So I don't know. It's he's not the best profile, but I think he's worthy of rostering still.
Yeah, I think he's worthy of rostering. Is it a start every week? Maybe not, but I think he's still going to be good. We're just seeing the goods and the bads, as you mentioned. You talked about it all, and that's kind of expected with him. He was running really good, but he was running really good while still, I guess, not hitting for an average. So he's running really good, I guess, is the way I would say it. And I think the skills are still there, so we'll have to kind of wait and see how that pans out. But he's still playing every day. It's more than we can ask for a lot of guys. I think their offense still is good. I just mentioned they have scuffled a bit as well, so something to monitor there. All right, Ben, we'll wrap it up there. Any final thoughts as we wrap up week 21 Fab, 6 Fab weeks to go, 7 weeks of baseball kicked off tonight?
Well, you know this, but listeners, if you missed it earlier, I will not be here. So Bubba told me who I think is going to fill in, and the show will be in good hands. So you guys will still get your Bubba fix next Monday.
Yep, just to get your Bubba fix, you'll get your Fab fix, and the guest is going to be awesome. So I'm pretty pumped on that one. I never say names because I might screw it up or someone might, lives happen. So I don't want to reveal anything until it happens, but it could be a fun guest, and no, you will not guess it. So I will throw that out to you right now, and I'm pretty excited about that. But Ben will be back the following week to join us, and maybe he's going to be burnt crab red because he doesn't tan, he said, but we'll see how that one goes. But until next time, make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I am at BD Entrick. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 873. Catch y'all next time.